CHI Files, the ultimate Bears podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome in. It is time for another edition of the podcast. So much to be able to talk about. All the action from week two. We'll be breaking it down. Offense, defense, all the injuries to talk about. Speaking of injuries and around the league, we will go around the league with the coach, Brian Billick. He joins us as well, as he always does each week, to give us his analysis on what happened in week two and even looking ahead to week three. And then this week in overtime from Sports Illustrated and Monday Morning Quarterback, Jenny Ventris joins us to be able to go through our six-pack of questions. But as always, we kick things off with the big interview. Let's get to it.
The big interview.
Time to talk Bears. To do that, the managing editor for the Bears, Recover 32. You find him on Twitter at TimWeaver84. Tim joins me here to talk about the Chicago Bears. And following the Monday night game, everybody in Philadelphia is excited because the Carson Wentz train and the bandwagon continues to roll, whereas Chicago is left with a question mark at quarterback. Tim, what's your overall takeaway before we get to specifics, your overall takeaway from the 29-14 loss on Monday night for the Bears?
Well, the 29-14 score makes it sound like it was closer than it actually was. This was a debacle on every level. The Bears pretty much had one good scoring drive wherein Jay Cutler looked amazing. At one point in this game, he was averaging 11.2 yards per pass. He was slinging it around the field. He looked like Aaron Rodgers in his prime. And then he just completely fell apart in the second half. It's funny because we got to see Carson Wentz and the contrast between the two. If you were looking at that game and knew nothing about either quarterback, you would say Wentz is the 10-year veteran and Cutler was the rookie, because that's what he always winds up doing. He makes rookie mistakes, and it's been 10 years now he's been doing this, so their ceiling with him at quarterback is very limited. Now that he's going to be out and Brian Hoyer is there, of course Bears fans are going to be begging to have Cutler back in about 2 or 3 weeks or however long he's out with his thumb. But I think we've very clearly seen where the ceiling is with Cutler, and he's taken this team as far as it's going to go. I don't know what the solution is, but they need to move on. They need to find a new franchise quarterback, because this is as far as it goes. He's the last vestige of the old regime, and it's time to move on. That's really the biggest takeaway I have, I think.
When it was originally, reported, obviously the hand injury, the thumb, and they're waiting on different reports. What's the future going to be? My question, Tim, on my radio show after the game Monday night, I said that I figured that Bears fans are probably secretly rooting for him to be out for a while, just because they're sort of over it when it comes to Jay Cutler. And it sounds like your take is kind of the same, where, okay, this train has already shown what it is. Bears fans have read this chapter over and over again. It doesn't seem to get any better, and it's time to move on. I know that's the general sentiment, and you just shared it as well, but is part of the challenge the idea of, okay, well, if not him, then who?
That's exactly the challenge, which is why it's so dangerous to try to do what the Eagles did this last year. Trying to find a new franchise quarterback is really, really difficult in this league, which is why Cutler has lasted as long as he has. If he could find a good quarterback on a tree, you'd say, oh, we'll just get rid of Cutler and we have this new one. We'll be fine. It's not easy to do, to develop these guys. Carson Wentz is one in a million. You saw what happened with Jared Goff. It looks like he's a bust right now. So for every Peyton Manning, there's a Ryan Leaf. For every Carson Wentz, there's a Jared Goff. Maybe a little bit too early for that comparison, but it's tough to find these guys. But I think it's very clear now that it's not going to work out long term. And yes, there's a lot of schadenfreude going on. I don't like the idea that he doesn't care. I've never bought into this whole facial expression thing. They call it like resting Jay Cutler face. It looks like he doesn't care. It looks like he's disinterested and he's not a leader. I don't care about that stuff. My problem is he does not take care of the ball. Earlier in the game, he had a questionable tuck and run. He got hammered and he coughed it up. And then the interception was just ghastly. What makes Cutler's interception so much worse than everyone else's is that they're rookie-level mistakes. He just chucks this ball up, and Alshon Jeffrey was not looking for it. It was into double coverage. It had no chance whatsoever. Now, what you say to a rookie, you say, hey, in that situation, you want to take the sack or throw the ball away. Don't try to Rex Grossman it and chuck it down the field. But Cutler does this year after year after year, and the frustration is obviously born of that, and it's time to move on. It's so frustrating. I can't even express it.
Well, and one of the things, Tim, when it comes to Cutler that, you know, looked into, you know, a couple of times is that, you know, following this season, you know, just from the mathematical standpoint, the dead money associated with the big contract that he got is basically gone. The Bears will have eaten it all by then, which means they could go ahead and cut him. The dollars and cents of that would make sense. Now, to your point, it's, you know, who do you draft or who do you sign? To be able to try to replace him. But, you know, I have felt like the Bears fans have wanted to move on from him for several seasons, and now you're finally to the point where, you know, what occurred in the Monday night game may actually finally be the breaking point. Let's break away from Cutler for a little bit, as much as he is the main topic with the Bears. The other frustrating thing, and you'll have to tell me whether it's a function of the struggles on offense or whether it's his own struggles, and that's Jeremy Langford. What are you seeing out of him that is causing him the struggles that he's having running the ball?
He's just not very explosive. I think this team is going to really regret not at least making Matt Forte an offer. We know that he's, what, his eighth or ninth year. He's past his prime, but he looks pretty good with the Jets right now, and I don't understand how, after everything he did, they didn't even make him an offer. But, yeah, they wanted to make C.J. Anderson one. Just didn't make any sense to me. And Langford, he does some things well. I think he's a good downhill runner. We saw he got across the goal line. But that's really the extent of his skill set, I think, as far as a starter goes. He averaged 2.5 yards per carry last night, and part of that is the offensive line was just garbage. Bobby Massey, they got to figure something out there. That's just a whole other problem. But they don't have anyone that can really take over, but I did like what I saw from Jordan Howard. He had 3 carries, wound up with 22 yards. He looked like he had a little bit more burst, and now that Kadeem Carey may be out, I think I'd like to see a little bit more from him. But Langford just does not look like the guy, especially not compared to Forte.
Is this team missing Adam Gase, or do we make too much of that?
I think they're really missing him, and if it had been my choice, I think he should have been the head coach. John Fox is kind of – they're perfect for each other, Jay Cutler in a way, not to bring it back to him, but that's what always seems to happen here. He seems to be okay with just winning the division, with just being good enough. He's just not – he doesn't go aggressively after wins. His play calling is too conservative. This has been a problem his whole career in Denver and now here. I think that what they really need to do is – go after Alshon Jeffery more. I don't understand how he only got 7 targets last night. They're too conservative by default. I don't know what the answer is from the organizational standpoint. You get lost in frustration here. I've totally lost my train of thought. It's just so bizarre that they've been dysfunctional for this long.
And the truth is, I completely get it. I mean, as we've gone through these NFL Files podcasts that I've done, I've talked to a number of different beat writers and reporters and radio hosts from different teams, and there's a number of teams right now that I've talked to that their squad is 0-2, that kind of have that same frustration point that you're talking about right now. And I think sometimes the worst part of it is maybe going back to what you said from the very beginning, which is feeling like, yes, you're frustrated, but there's also not... there's not a light at the end of the tunnel. You know, I mean, I guess I could point out that, you know, there's some teams that we've talked about and that we look at in the NFL and say, okay, yes, they're struggling, but, you know, this player is about to return from suspension or this player is about to return from an injury. And so you kind of have a light at the end of the tunnel. I feel like the frustration for Bears fans right now, Tim, is that they can't see the light. They don't know where it is.
That's understandable. I think that they honestly turned a corner with this last offseason. They made some really good moves. Jarrell Freeman had a big game last night. I think he had 3 tackles for a loss. Finding him and Danny Trevathan for the prices that they got was pretty remarkable by Ryan Pace. I think he's a very sharp personnel guy. And it was a really good draft class, too. It's just it's going to take a while. It was a really good and really deep draft class. This is you know, that was well talked up going into the draft, but it's going to take a while. Rookies don't just come in. It's pretty rare to have a guy like Sterling Shepard who just comes in and balls out from week one. These guys are going to be better. It's going to be a long rebuilding process, and I don't know if they're going to give Ryan Pace and John Fox the time they need to do it. I'm talking about at least a 5-year process here, given where they're at right now.
Well, now the Bears have to go on the road and take on Dak Prescott and the Cowboys in a Sunday night affair. Give me your preview of that one, Tim.
Well, I would love to see Jay Cutler with Dallas's offensive line. I think Dak Prescott is the luckiest rookie in the world to have that kind of protection that he does. In the preseason, he was just phenomenal. I think I got a little carried away with the hype. I wound up drafting him in one of my leagues. Not looking so great right now, but he looks like he has potential to be something special. And Ezekiel Elliott has shown some flashes, but their running game is just a little bit not quite where you expect to be. I think they're averaging 100.5 points returning yards per game, and given the depth they have up front and the talent with Alfred Morris and Ezekiel Elliott, that's what they want to build their team around. You want to see them get that going a little bit. Otherwise, I think their ceiling is maybe 8-8 or something like that. But hey, that's a hell of a lot better than the Bears are doing right now. They're struggling, and I think Dallas overall, the one thing that they have going for them coming into this game is the Cowboys do not have a pass rush. God forbid we don't want to see Greg Hardy in the NFL anymore. Good riddance. But they're missing him. They're also missing Randy Gregory. They just don't have anybody who can really get after you. And that's been the Bears' big problem. They can't protect Jay Cutler on the edges. So if they can take care of him there, they might have a shot.
Tim Weaver's been my guest, the editor, managing editor for the Bears for Cover 32. You follow Tim on Twitter at TimWeaver84. Tim, as always, appreciate the time, and it sounds like you and all the Bears fans could stand to go hang out at the corner bar for a little bit and grab an old style. Sounds like everybody just kind of needs a deep breath and a beer.
Hey, I'm over it. The minute they signed Cutler to that 7-year deal, I said I was done. That's why I'm a Seahawks fan now. I'm already over it, but
Tim,
I sympathize.
Tim Weaver with me, TimWeaver84 on Twitter. Tim, as always, thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up next, the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
It is time, as always, for us to go around the NFL, and to do that, we are joined by the coach, Brian Billick. He's presented by SeatGeek, reminding you that you can visit SeatGeek.com or you can download the SeatGeek app. Always make sure that you, your friends, your family are getting the best deal on tickets. Doesn't matter if it's a sporting event or a concert, SeatGeek helps you out with the amazing technology of Deal Score, so make sure that you have the SeatGeek app on your phone the next time you and your family are ready to head out to the big game or to a concert. Coach, let's start with Monday Night Football, where we know that Jay Cutler injured his hand, was not able to go back into the game, but more of the talk seems to be about whether or not Jay Cutler is really the right guy or the right future for Chicago. I suppose we could argue that what other choice do they have? What is your take on what you've seen from Jay Cutler and from the Bears?
Well, yeah, it's a tough question. It's always difficult to separate the play of a quarterback from what's going around him. Yeah, it's been a tough go for Jay Cutler, not the least of which is the fact that he's had something along the line of 6 or 7 different coordinators, therefore 6 or 7 basically different systems over the time he's been in Denver over the last 8 years. So I don't know of any quarterback that's going to function well in that situation. It may be time for Chicago to move on. What's gone under the bridge, so to speak, by way of Jay Cutler, it just hasn't been successful. This is not a very good football team. So for them to totally reshuffle the deck and try to move forward might be the thing to do.
When you look on the other side of the ball, Coach, you've got 2 games under Carson Wentz's belt and 2 wins. Granted, one against Chicago, one against Cleveland. However, what have you seen from the rookie that's impressed you the most?
Yeah, I mean, the schedule makers certainly made it certainly an easier pass for this rookie to start out when talking about the 2 teams he's had to face. But having said that, you can't help but be impressed with what Carson Wentz has done. He seems to be very calm in the pocket, so to speak. You know, if you want to be nitpicky, third down has not been still real productive. I think he was 3 of 10 in the first game. He's 3 of 15 this game. So sustaining drives is something, but that will come as the rookie continues to mature in the system. And also the fact that the Eagles are staying committed to the run as best they can. You know, they ran it better than 30 times and only had 100 yards. But it shows you that they're trying to keep that balance for Carson Wentz. He threw it 37 times in the first game, 34 times last night. That's ambitious for a rookie quarterback. Now, we'll see going forward whether they maintain this. The schedule's obviously going to get a little bit tougher for them as they go down the way. You know, obviously in Cleveland and Chicago having their difficulties as they try to, you know, piece some wins together here. But we're going to find out, you know, the fact that he did it at home and the fact that he did it, you know, on the road. We're going to find out this week because all but at home, they're going to face the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he's going to go across from Ben Roethlisberger.
Coach, when you look at what the Patriots have been doing without Tom Brady, what's the most impressive part of it to you?
Well, anytime you lose your quarterback and then your backup quarterback, of course, we kind of get used to it with New England, don't we? We just kind of think they're going to overcome anything. This will be an interesting challenge on a short week, playing a very good Houston team. Brissett, the young rookie, obviously came in, you know, they spotted him 24-point lead, so obviously life was pretty good at that point. The key for him, and obviously Bill Belichick knows this, is to let that talent around you win for you. If they can get Gronkowski back, they have Martellus Bennett, this Julian Edelman. Those are some pretty good inside targets, help get the ball out of your hand quickly. I imagine we're going to see a lot of sprints and boots and waggles by Brissett to get out from behind the pocket. But this is going to be a challenge for you now because Houston, all but at home for New England, where they're almost unbeatable. The good thing is the cavalry is on the way in a couple of weeks when they're going to get Brady back.
When you look at what the Buffalo Bills have been doing, there are a lot of folks that believe this is Rex Ryan's sort of last rodeo here and that the Bills have not been living up to the expectation of the fans or of the team. What are you seeing out of the Bills, and is this Rex Ryan's last run?
Well, the fact that he came in from a division opponent after he got fired from New York and the expectations took over the number one rated defense in the league and it has not performed well. And the fact that now that they're 0-2 and they've got Arizona and all but New England. Now, you know, it's Tom Brady-less New England. It may be a Jimmy Garoppolo-less New England. If they should struggle and lose to Arizona and then somehow at New England, and again, New England's a tough place to play, particularly without those two individuals, and lose, you know, an 0-4 Buffalo Bills team, you've already fired your offensive coordinator. It's going to be a tough road to hoe for Buffalo.
What are you seeing that are the struggles right now for the Seattle Seahawks, Coach? Very shocking, I suppose, for just about anybody to see the L.A. Rams wind up beating them this past weekend. They just don't seem to be in sync on offense. What are you seeing with the Seahawks?
Well, we saw this early last year. Remember, they started 0-2 last year, but I think it begins with the offensive line. They're struggling on the offensive line, so therefore they're not running the ball well. They're not protecting Russell Wilson as well. Russell Wilson finally will be likely a plus 500 throw quarterback this year, and I think he's up to it. Up to this point, he's been under 450 throws every year. Why? Because they play great defense and run the ball. Defense is not playing as well. Solid, but not as well as we've seen, particularly in their Super Bowl run. So, yeah, it's a cascading set of events. It doesn't mean it can't get better if Russell Wilson's ankle gets a little bit better, if they can shore up the offensive line a little bit. But, again, the Seattle Seahawks teams that have gone on this great run, it was anchored by league-leading defense, top-five rushing attack, and they have neither one of those right now.
And are they missing – you talked about the running game. Is it not just missing the running game but missing Marshawn Lynch specifically? Are they missing that sort of, you know, downhill Mack truck rushing attack?
Yeah, I think the physicality of Marshawn Lynch was a mentality that played into the formula for them. You get a little bit extra from Russell Wilson on the edges when he scrambles around. And so I think the way they're running the ball right now, and again, it goes back to the offensive line. I just don't think that they're performing at a level that lends itself. I mean, you talk about that called smash-mouth physical play. That's not what Seattle is right now.
When the Vikings managed to get the win to open up the brand new stadium, one of the comments that I had made, Coach, a couple of weeks ago was that this might be the best team that Sam Bradford's ever been on, and so maybe we will finally see the Sam Bradford that everybody expected coming out of college. Did you see that in the home win on Sunday night?
Yeah, when you begin with the defense, the way they're playing defense, which is just spectacular, you know, and when you look at this defense, you got to love it. Outside of Matt Barr, you name somebody on the Minnesota Viking defense. Linville Joseph is obviously pretty good. But they don't have those marquee, okay, yeah, they're anchoring their defense. They're just playing great team defense. Mike Zimmer gets a lot of credit for that. Depending upon when Adrian Peterson can come back, they haven't been running the ball particularly well. I think that goes back to the offensive line to a degree. I think it also goes back to the fact that when you go back and look last year, Adrian Peterson ran for better than 1,400 yards. His best game was against the Oakland Raiders. I went back and looked at that game. He was in the eye. They had two tight ends. They were playing a physical running game. The fact that they're doing more and more out of the gun, I don't know that suits the running style, certainly not of Adrian Peterson. I'm not sure they wouldn't be better served to get back into the eye and two tight ends, let Sam Bradford hand the ball off or play action fake and then throw the ball down the field. And with that great defense, that can be a good winning formula for this team because they're clearly a good football team.
On the other side of it from Sunday night, the Packers. Coach, what are you seeing that you like and what has you concerned with Green Bay?
Well, you know, everybody thought when Jordy Nelson came back, you know, life would be fine, that everything was going to be okay at that point. I think there's a little more to it. I think the defense, obviously, there's still some question marks there. Aaron Rodgers doesn't, although he's still making some just spectacular throws. The fact when he goes back to Minnesota playing so good on defense, Aaron Rodgers under 60%. He's not having the efficiency that we're used to seeing with Aaron Rodgers. With the running game, you know, Eddie Lacy, the slimmed down Eddie Lacy, is not necessarily generating the productivity you'd like to see. I'm not sure I wouldn't go back. It's not my place to second guess Mike McCarthy. He's an excellent play caller. But the up-tempo, high-paced Green Bay, they like that no huddle. I'm not sure they might not be better off going back to a more structured offense, control the clock a little bit more, and let Aaron Rodgers operate from that standpoint.
Speaking of defense, through the first 2 weeks, we've seen the New York Giants give up only 32 points, 19 to the Cowboys, and, of course, 13 this past week in holding the Saints in check. Obviously, the Giants have been impressive through 2 weeks with this new revamped defense.
Yeah, it's nice to see that $200 million can buy you something in today's economy. They went out and spent a bunch of money on that defense. They're playing like a top 10 defense compared to last year, which, you know, that's what they needed to approach, where they were literally last in the league. So that's quite a jump, going from last in the league in defense to jumping into the top 10. Now, we've only got two games, so we got a long way to go. But it was obviously money well spent. And then when you throw in, obviously, this emerging dynamic wide receiving corps with OBJ, and obviously it's good to see Cruz back into it, and this young man Shepard, the rookie. That's quite a threesome. You'd have to go back in the Giants, back to the 2011 team when they had Plexico Burress and Victor Cruz was a part of that. Go back even further to 2007. This is clearly the best wide receiving core that we've seen out of New York.
Always great stuff with the coach, Brian Billick. He's brought to us each and every week on the NFL Files by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got that SeatGeek app on your phone or visit SeatGeek.com so you can make sure you, your family, friends, always getting the best deal on tickets. Check out Deal Score that makes sure that the tickets you've got, you can look at that stadium view and know that you're getting the best deal. Coach, appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good.
Stay tuned. Overtime coming up next.
Overtime.
It is time for overtime, and to do that this week from Sports Illustrated, a Monday morning quarterback, Jenny Vrentas joins us. Jenny, we do a six-pack of questions here in overtime, so let's start here. Question number one, are you on the Carson Wentz bandwagon?
I'm halfway on. I think the first two wins, it's great to get off the 2-0 start. I think he and Doug Peterson and the offensive coaching staff have done a great job. I think he's still, like any young quarterback, still has a lot of room to grow. I hate to make any judgments after two games, but certainly how quickly he's gotten into the game and been able to make some of the throws and decisions he's made, he's certainly impressed me.
All right, so you're not on the bus quite yet, but you might be standing at the bus stop is what you're saying.
There you go. That's a great way to say it.
Okay, good. Question number two, Jenny, what right now do you think is the biggest problem facing the NFL?
Health and safety. I think it's, ultimately will determine the future of the game, how we view the game. Are we comfortable watching the game, sending our kids to play the game? So I think how the NFL and the sport of football handle health and safety over the next 10 to 15 years is critical in determining the direction of the sport.
All right. Question number three. Who right now is your current NFL player that's your favorite to interview?
Favorite player to interview? That is a great question.
Or maybe just a favorite one you've done recently. I know it's hard to single one out.
Favorite one. Right. It is hard to single one out. I always enjoy visiting with the Cardinals. They have a lot of really interesting, honest guys. And I was out there in August, and I think Tyrann Mathieu is just so fun to interview. The energy that he brings his team on the field, he just makes him so interesting off the field to talk to as well. So he's definitely a guy that I really enjoy talking with.
All right. Question number five for us here, or question number four, excuse me, as we go through. Is Rex Ryan overrated as a head coach?
I've covered Rex for a long time. I do not question his ability at all as a defensive-minded coach. Now, head coach is a big difference, but I still don't believe that he's overrated because I think he gets a lot of criticism that he doesn't necessarily deserve. I think he can win. I do not believe that he is on the hot seat as much as people want to say this year. So, no, I do not think he's overrated as a head coach.
As you followed the question number five here, as you followed the AFC East, there's been a lot of discussion about Darrell Revis and whether or not he has faded as a defender. Do you buy into that? Is it time for him to slide over to safety? What's your take on Darrell Revis?
He is certainly not playing at the same level he played at in 2009, 2010. That was when he was at the top of the mountain. So when we're used to seeing a player who lines up one-on-one with a receiver and man coverage all the time, very often with no help at all, that's so rare and unusual. So watching him now, he's not that same player. That much is clear. I don't believe it's time to put him safety yet. I think he can still be effective as a cornerback. It's just a different kind of cornerback. He's not that kind of guy you can stick on an island anymore. And that's okay. There aren't many of those guys in the game. But I think he can still be an effective cornerback.
All right. Final question in our six pack of questions here for you, Jenny. We love to do this early in the season, so we might as well do it here. If you had to hand out the NFL's MVP award after the first 2 weeks, who would you give it to?
MVP award after the first 2 weeks. Well, it's not a player, but I give it to Belichick for winning two games. But that's coach of the year, and you asked MVP award. I'm going with Von Miller.
All right. Well, see, and you're not far off because last year on my radio show, I actually said that I thought the MVP of the league was Wade Phillips. So for you to give it to Bill Belichick after 2 weeks kind of makes sense, right?
Right. But yeah, I mean, that Denver defense, Miller's a good choice. I know a defensive player hasn't won since Lawrence Taylor, but I'm sticking with Miller right now.
There she is, Jenny Ventress from Sports Illustrated Monday Morning Quarterback. You find her on Twitter at Jenny Ventress, V-R-E-N-T-A-S. Jenny, appreciate the time for joining us on the NFL Files. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Really appreciate Jenny's time. That'll do it. That wraps up our podcast for this week. Make sure you're checking out all the archives posted up at audioboom.com. All you got to do is search NFL Files, listen for your favorite team or for any of the teams around the NFL. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.